Sehr gut, sehr gut, sehr gut.
Sehr gut?
Wieso Steuer ist sehr gut? Das sagen ganz viele.
Wer sagt das?
Stiftung Warentest, Computerbild, Focus Money, Chip, Finanztipp, such dir was aus.
Mega, aber das ist doch bestimmt kompliziert.
Nö, einfach Foto von der Lohnsteuerbescheinigung machen und fertig.
Klingt sehr gut.
Ist sehr gut. Mit Wieso Steuer? Bis zum 31. Juli abgeben.
Welcome to Mysterious Universe. If this is your first time listening, I'm Joe Hodgson. Joining me is Brandon Thomas. How are you, sir?
Hello.
Hello.
This is our first official, you know, free episode. If you are on Plus, you listen to us on Tuesdays, and we kind of introduced ourselves and really just kind of had a BS session for a bit and, you know, kind of told our story and how we got here. So if you want to hear all that, you can go join Plus and go listen to that episode. Today, though, we are talking about invisible ninja midgets, junkie gang stalking, and food fights with the feds. This is a book by Robert Guffey, published in 2015, called Camellio. And I haven't heard a whole lot of people cover this book. I think I was talking to Brandon about that, but I haven't heard a whole hell of a lot of people covering it. A couple here and there, but it is an amazing story that just fits right in with everything Mysterious Universe. And Brandon, I know you've heard of this book before because we have talked about it quite a bit. But what's your thoughts on the book in general? Do you think it's real?
Think it's true? God, no. Well, that's a loaded question. What is real? Again, guys, listen to the last Plus episode. See how we feel about the word real and all of that. Yes, it's a fascinating tale, as they are. And it's one that, honestly, if you were involved in some sort of gang stalking, gaslighting program, and you were rolling some weird shit out, you would do it on this type of guy. And that's the whole point here, is that it's so interesting because as batshit crazy as it is, it kind of makes sense to a certain degree, as long as your ability to make sense is from a really weird perspective. And it's fascinating. It's riddled with amazing cases and just one of my favorites, which I'm not going to spoil anything, but it's just so cool. It's so gnarly and interesting, and it just boggles the mind, which is why I'm grateful that you are covering it.
I know. I had a great time trying to put notes together for this because it's rather disjointed. The whole story is just... I mean, a lot of it, the way Guffey writes is really interesting, but there's a couple chapters, like entire chapters of just transcripts of his phone calls with Dion, the main character in the story, and transcripts of an interview he did with a guy that I'll get into later, but it was kind of hard piecing together everything. So if it seems disjointed, it's because it is, because it's a bizarre story.
Well, it is, and his subject has been so bizarre as well. It's like, could you imagine following this dude around in some of the altered states that he's in? And I know you're going to get into it here, but we can imagine what the, you know, keeping the minutes for a crackhead is like. And you're just sitting there like, all right, you know, 5 a.m., he crushes up Fruity Pebbles and sniffs it, and then goes out into the 5:08 a.m., you know, goes out into the garage and then ends up beating on a three-wheeled mower with a hammer for 40 minutes, you know, while listening to opera at full blast. It's these things that are interesting about it. But also between all of that, there is something fascinating going on.
Yeah. And like you said, it was a, if this type of thing is real and it happens, what a perfect person to do this to, because he's instantly discreditable as a junkie, as a crazy guy that's just high off his tits all the time. And so why would you believe this crazy crackhead? But again, like we talked about in the Plus episode, you got to consider these stories, whether you believe them or not. It's fun to entertain and maybe gives you a different perspective on everything, really, especially the government, which, you know, we're not big fans of over here, but,
you know, they're entertaining. It's hilarious. I will say that. It depends on the perspective you've got, but it is funny as shit, honestly. Yeah.
So, yeah, this starts out in the summer of 2003. So the main character here that Robert is writing about is Dion Fuller. They're old high school friends that kept in touch afterwards. Their paths diverged quite dramatically. Obviously, Dion chose more of a hedonistic type of lifestyle, and Guffey, the author, was actually a college professor or instructor or whatever you want to call him. And but they still kept in touch as good friends do. And it starts out with the slow spiral that Dion experienced right after he found his girlfriend cheating on him. And she was kind of a stabilizing influence on him and kept him, you know, in check, as women do. Thank you, women.
Thank you.
And that was the start of it. They broke up. He ended up getting into a bicycle wreck, I believe, and getting hurt. So then he couldn't work anymore. So he's on unemployment, collecting, you know, the government checks, and basically just being high in his apartment all day.
Hang on, bicycle? Like just like you got to pedal it kind of bicycle?
I believe
not a motorcycle. Just want to be clear here, because I envisioned that movie Hot Rod, you know, when he's doing all the stunts and stuff and he's high off of his ass building these homemade ramps and just launching it into the street with no regard, with a devil may care attitude.
I found it. It was a bicycle. He broke his leg riding a bicycle. So he's out for the count as far as the workforce goes.
Okay.
But just surrounded by addicts. This is in a Pacific Beach down in San Diego, I believe, somewhere around there, Southern California, but not a particularly great area that he was living in. And it didn't help that, you know, he surrounded himself by druggies and, you know, all the degenerates. And of course, that comes along with cops being everywhere all the time. And he basically, if anybody knows people like this, what a trap house is, you know, a drug house is 24-hour parties all the time. Kind of reminds me of one of the scenes from Breaking Bad, you know, where they just have that house that's just always big speakers everywhere. Everybody's doped up, just having a blast, having the time of their life.
Mary and I's first home together was right across the street from a crack house, and it was great. We had a lot of fun. It was very entertaining. There was a bomb threat that happened a few houses down from that, unrelated, that was sort of our signature of that probably we should go now. But yes, it was hilarious. There were moments where they would get into arguments, and one would try to jump the curb and run the over with the van. The one then would tuck and roll despite her size, and you would not think she is that agile, but man, when it comes down to it, she would then pick up bricks from their landscaping, I'm holding up air quotes there, and then Fozzie them at the windshield of the van until it then hurried off of the lawn and took off. And there was just one incident, and we're just standing outside with the dogs one evening in the front yard, and this all happens right in front of us, of many. And again, that thing about banging on a mower with a hammer while blaring opera music, that's a real life story. That's from this crack house. Yeah.
I believe you.
Cracktivities is what we would call it. And just mowing your lawn at 9 o'clock at night, you know, holding a torch, it's insane.
Yeah, crackheads, if nothing else, are great entertainment, especially in the era of everybody having a camera and getting to witness these things and themselves and going, oh, wow, they really do these crazy things. It's fun.
Fascinating.
They are also known, meth addicts are also known for being a bit paranoid.
What?
And maybe thinking that people are following them all the time, which goes back to what we were talking about, a perfect subject for this type of activity, because nobody's going to believe you. Oh, you're on meth. So, yeah, sure, there's people in the bushes watching you, buddy. Right, okay.
Yeah, you're higher than giraffe pussy. You have no idea what's going on. We could be following you, we could not. And even if we were, nobody would believe you.
Yep. So in the middle of one of these 24-hour parties, this is kind of where it kicks off, where the crux of the story is. Some kid named Lee, just going to go by Lee, stopped by and asked if he could stay for a while. So Dion doesn't know this guy from Adam, but it's a 24-hour drug house. And he's like, sure, well, what's one more person? There's people coming and going all the time. Come on in, buddy. Stay for a bit. What he didn't know is that this kid had recently gone AWOL from nearby Camp Pendleton. And he also didn't just go AWOL. He absconded with 25 pairs of night vision goggles, a 9mm pistol taken off the body of a dead Iraqi general. Apparently, this is what we're told, and a DOD laptop and an entire truck. So this guy didn't just go AWOL, which is already, I think, a court martial type of thing that they would do when when that happens in the military. I don't know. Never been in the military.
Did he kill the Iraqi general to get the gun, or was it a guy just like already killed from something else and just laying there and he was like, well, I'll just take the gun? Or was it like in a box from another incident?
Yeah, I think it was just, It just happened to be
tagged that way. It just had the tag on the gun. That's how he knew.
But the feds weren't even interested in that. What they were really focused on were these night vision goggles. So he didn't think there was anything weird about this guy having all this shit. He just was like, whatever, you know, crackheads have all kinds of weird stuff all the time. They're always trying to sell them for the next bag. So he didn't think it was crazy until Lee opens the laptop and Dion sees this huge DOD logo. And this is, so this is July 18th of 2003 when this happened. So he that's when it freaked him out. Being a crackhead, he's going, you can't bring that in here. A DOD laptop? Are you out of your mind? This is crazy. I don't even think he cared about anything else. He just saw that and it triggered something in his crackhead brain. It was like, DOD, not good. Don't
they
want
can
that
trace here. That. Yeah.
Right. So, but Lee didn't really care. And he's, I mean, Dion's telling him, dude, they can track that thing. Obviously, it's DOD. They can track everything anyway. So why would you do that? And the funny thing is that Dion's little crackhead thing that triggered in his brain was correct. Because as he's going through file after file on this laptop, the Lee guy, not Dion, but he's going through all these files and Dion's watching him and, you know, marked top secret, above top secret, all these files, schematics about things, you know, like machines he's never seen before. And not more than like 10 minutes later, big old knock at the door. And of course, everybody's freaking out. There's junkies everywhere, drugs everywhere. So everybody's like, oh shit, we strung out on the couch. You know, oh no, knock on the door. And you can always tell a cop knock. If any of you have been unfortunate enough to have the cops at your door, you know that knock.
And then the scurry that's of all the crackheads scurrying off. Yeah, like cockroaches when the light turns on.
Little cockroaches.
Mm-hmm.
So he answers the door, which is dumb. But he's also on drugs, so he wasn't really thinking correctly. But he answers the door to find a special agent, Lita A. Johnston of the NCIS. And she's joined by the classic two Men in Black style people behind her.
Yep.
And she identifies herself, shows the badge, all that stuff. And she got straight to the point, told Dion they had reason to believe he was in possession of stolen military property and we're going to search your shit. Well, luckily, Dion's father had been a narcotics officer, and Dion kind of knew his rights, which means he probably shouldn't have opened the door in the first place, but here we are.
You know, this is the way, right? Your dad's a narcotics officer. You know so much about the law that you end up spending a good amount of your life doing drugs that your dad told you not to and busted because you know the loopholes.
This is in the DARE era, too, so he was not listening to the...
The DARE. Man, do you remember that? I heard it's a pyramid scheme. Did you know that? That if other officers got officers to sign up, and that's why it grew so quickly, that it was all, was horrible, and they were funneling money and all sorts of shit. So anyway, probably don't do drugs, kids, but live your life. Do what you feel.
Do your own research on drugs, too. Some of them are pretty fun, but...
Don't listen to the cops for sure about that. That's not a good resource. That's a skewed narrative for sure.
Yeah, and this is not, you know, condoning drug use, but do your own research, live your own life. Just don't get into this scenario Dion finds himself in because it's not
slippery
fun.
Slope, guys. This is the point. Slippery slope. You know, always know your dealer. Never take more than you can handle. Just be careful.
First one's always free, too. Remember that.
Yeah, remember that. Slippery slope, guys.
So he refused to let them in because they didn't have a search warrant. Obviously, Lita says, well, we'll be right back. That gave them time, though. I think they were back in it wasn't much longer, maybe a half hour. And in the meantime, Dion's telling all the junkies to get the fuck out because the feds were going to be coming to search the house soon. So they didn't waste any time. They drop all their drugs on the floor and GTFO'd. Lee tried to leave as well, but Dion made him stay since he was the whole reason the cops were there.
Yeah.
He's like, this isn't coming down on me. Little does he know. So the NCIS came back soon, but it was utter chaos because local cops showed up too, because they knew it was a trap house, and they're like, "Oh, we're gonna find some awesome, you know, drug bus." So they're bumping into each other, just a total case of the right hand not knowing what the left was doing. Cops looking for drugs, NCIS looking for goggles. Particularly the goggles. They apparently didn't care too much about the laptop, but they were just badgering Dion. Over and over again, goggles, 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 where are the goggles? And he doesn't even know that that was part of what Lee had absconded with. So he's like, what are you talking about goggles? Why do you want this? You're searching my place, find them, whatever. They never did find the goggles as far as I know, but so they were arrested. I mean, this is 2003. So it's right after 9/11, the Patriot Act, you know, basically the feds can do whatever they want after that. So they're just arrested, interrogated for 6 days straight. And they apparently came to the conclusion that Dion was some big time smuggler, that he, you know, maybe Lee worked for him and that they're going to be selling the goggles or smuggling him to China or something. Who knows? So they accused him of treason. They tried to show him pictures of people he'd never seen before. They did show him a picture of Lee, which apparently he did know for 5 minutes. A local drug dealer, local meth addicts, all these people. But Dion, not being a snitch, refused to narc and would, he's like, put me in cuffs, bro. Send me to jail. I'm not snitching.
Now I got scruples.
Yeah. Honor among thieves and drug addicts. So after 6 days of questioning, they randomly just let him go, but with a ton of drug charges, but then dropped them. So they thought that was weird. That was kind of a weird point in the story where they had him questioning for 6 days, all these drug charges over him, but then just drop him and let him go. And he's like, okay, well, whatever. But the message was clear that he'd brushed up against something that wasn't supposed to exist.
Yeah.
When he got back, his apartment door was unlocked, even though he was sure he'd bolted it, which I don't know how he would have done that if he was being arrested, but he just started noticing weird things like that where he'd come home and his door was unlocked. These are random little things, but his computer's desktop icons would rearrange themselves.
Is this while he's on it or just like after he'd leave and come back and they'd be in different places?
Yeah, I think like he'd turn it off, turn it back on, and things would just be messed up. This is obviously easily attributable to him being a junkie.
Like, yeah.
Sure. You don't remember where you put your recycle bin icon. Whatever, right. Dude. He started hearing noises, like a mechanical buzz would start up at 3 a.m. and then it would go away and then come back the next night. Then he started noticing people following him. And at first it was different people, but they were always kind of just out of reach. And then he started recognizing him. That's how he realized he was being followed, that I've seen that guy. Why is he still outside my house? Why is he flicking his headlights on three times through my window? Like just weird things like that. Just basically just fucking with the guy. Just,
yeah.
And obviously being paranoid, he's noticing all this. And, so besides the random things like cars idling outside his window and shining their headlights through his bedroom window and all that stuff, he started getting followed all the time. Like everywhere he went, there was a couple people, and then it started being a lot of people, and it was, they're in their cars or they're directly just walking behind him. It's like movie stuff, you know,
like the Truman Show. Like he catches a pattern of these characters and he's like, hang on, this dude was wearing a different jacket yesterday, but it's the same dude, man. You know?
Yeah. And it's so cartoonish. It's something that you wouldn't, it sounds like a fake story. And so he's telling his friends this and they laughed. He told Robert, his friend, Robert's laughing, but he also listened because he's like, that is kind of weird, bro. I mean, I know you're known for your lifestyle, but this is weird, especially having this guy that apparently stole a bunch of equipment from the military. So I'm listening. So this is how the book started initially, is that Guffey had a notepad and would just write down all this stuff. He's a writer and an English teacher at a local community college. So he's already used to kind of doing this. And this is obviously early 2000s before, you know, iPads.
Or notes on your phone where you could voice note. Yeah.
So he kept an actual notepad where he would write down all these details. And this is how this book is so detailed, is because he kept meticulous notes on all this stuff.
This is the crackhead minutes we were talking about. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. So as he's teaching English at this community college, Guffey is also writing fringe essays about conspiracy lore and hidden tech. And he wasn't really like a wide-eyed believer. He was just kind of a curious skeptic who enjoyed poking around at the edges of reality, a la Mysterious Universe.
Come on.
He was also a third-degree Mason, which will become a little more important later in the story. We're not going that route with it because there's a bajillion shows that could tell you all about Freemasons and how they run the world and all that stuff. It's not important for that reason. It's who he meets later. So initially, Robert was thinking, oh, his friend's just, you know, he's unraveling all this stress, broke up with his girlfriend. This crazy dude stole a bunch of stuff and now the feds are after him. Plus he's high all the time. But curiosity did get the better of him. He started keeping these meticulous notes, dates, times, places, names, all these things. And the more he looked, the stranger it became. And he started looking into, you know, the so-called targeted individuals, gang stalking, all these things. And a lot of these stories, and Ben and Aaron have told a lot of these, and a lot of them really, it's hard to believe, especially when they tell you the reason why they're being stalked. Oh, it's because I made this post, or I discovered, you know, free energy. And it's like, okay, maybe.
Facebook Marketplace doesn't even let you sell chickens, you know? And now they're gang stalking me for this shit.
So he noticed that all these supposed targeted individuals were claiming kind of the same symptoms, voices projected into rooms, invisible stalkers, technology that could bend light, scramble perception, all these kinds of things. And then he traced it back to some actual real research on adaptive camouflage. So we'll get a little bit more into that, but I'm going to keep going with what Dion was going through. So as Guffy kept keeping tabs on Dion, he was worried he was losing his mind because of the drug use. But Dion called one day and was agitated and told him this whole story. And Robert found it hilarious at first that the feds thought he was a big time smuggler because he knew Dion and knew what he did with his time. And most of it was just trying to find a clean vein to put a needle in. So he's like, oh, the feds think you're a smuggler. That's hilarious, bro. So several days later, after he'd been let go after all this questioning, Guffy's kind of busy with his own personal life and girlfriend problems and these type of things, but he kind of, his ears perked up when Dion said he was being followed. So then, like usual, he wrote it off as a meth-induced paranoia, but it was a little different just because of how afraid Dion legitimately seemed. He told Guffy he was being tailed by about a dozen jarhead types, you know, high and tight marine, like they don't look like just average people. They're trained in some way. But they'd spread out. So he's being followed by all these people, but they would spread out when they're in public so that the public wouldn't notice anything. But acted like Dion was invisible as well. So they'd be following him, but act like he didn't exist.
Damn. That is a mind trip, you know, because you can see them scattered throughout. You recognize them all over the place, and then they're just ignoring you as you're staring at them. And so it's like one of those things you could feel yourself being looked at as well, and then you look over and they look away as if they're just ignoring you completely. So weird.
Gaslighting to the extreme. And it started off as a few, and then maybe a dozen, and then as far as Dion could tell, maybe about 45 different people following him.
That's a whole cast. Like, how do you even cast for that? Are you walking around the FBI office going, all right, we need, store clerk number 3, and we need you, you know, to bring your partner. You're off the case you're on right now. Come out here and pretend to be walking around and ignoring this guy.
Yeah.
What an allocation of resources, you know?
In a specific example, he got tired of being followed, and he'd try to lose his tail by ducking in and out of different stores and, you know, just generally being a crackhead, scampering around and, oh, somebody's following me. I got to duck into this alley.
Yeah, doing these barrel rolls behind bushes and shit. And
yeah.
Just hiding inside trash cans. Yeah.
They never really lost him, though. So one day he stops to get a beer, this 32-ounce tall boy, whatever. He realized the guy that was following him was still following him after he bought this beer. So he's like, you know what? Screw this. Walks up to the dude. It, on the street, dumps the whole 32-ounce beer on the dude's face. Now, normally, you do this to a random person, and they're going to flip out.
Oh, you're going to get your ass handed to you, boy. Yeah.
Especially in the day, this is before clicks and views were a big thing, or TikTok.
Oh, we'll kick your ass and not need it for the Vine. Sure.
Right. I know. You're getting punched. You do that to some random dude on the street. But the guy just froze up for a moment and then did nothing. Didn't say anything, didn't do anything, just walked away. So that freaked Dion out even more because he's like, now I know something's up because a normal person would have punched me for that.
But again, it's all about perspective, okay? So yes, maybe. But, you know, maybe this guy had just left his transcendental meditation class and he was like, oh, my sensei told me that I would be faced with a great challenge today and here it is. And now I can rise to this opportunity and transcend the bullshit. You never know. You know, I'm just throwing that in there, devil's advocate.
He could have gone to Panda Express a half hour earlier and got the fortune cookie that said, you will be faced with great difficulty. And he's like, oh, this is it. Wow, that Panda's like, on
dude,
point.
They and that orange chicken just sat right with me, so I know it's true, you know?
Yeah. Well, it sits with you well for a bit.
For a minute.
And then later, it's, yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this happened a couple times where he would just confront these people that are following him. He walked right up to one of them and called him are we allowed to say that?
You can say it. I think if you're quoting, it's okay. So, if you say
faggot.
Okay. And that's in quotes.
Early 2000s, that wasn't as offensive. Everybody, you called your buddies that, you know. But you say that to a stranger on the street, especially a jarhead type, you're probably going to get punched. But again, the man did nothing. And Dion did this several times, different ways. He just tried to mess with them back, and they were like Zen masters. They just did nothing and walked away.
Well, I'm shocked because he's such an elusive evader that they could even keep up with him. He was shaking all the, you know, you would think with those skills he could shake these tails, but it seems like they would just walk in a straight line and he would sort of skitter from one side of the alley to the other thinking he was losing them, and they're just like, dude, you're right there.
Right. And who knows how well he was at actually, you know, losing a tail. Besides all this following and the people, people watching him from the bushes or behind the fence, and he actually... To Dion's credit, he started noticing the same cars following him, and he started writing down the license plate numbers and the model and make and color and all these things of these cars that he was sure were following him all the time. And he gave it to a friend that worked at the DMV and said to look these plate numbers up and tell me who these people are. And of course, the friend ran all the plates and none of them had ever been issued. Now, you could say that is, you know, plausible if it was a couple, but I mean, he
every
did it on a
one.
Lot of cars and none of them, it's just, and you know, if it's a black project or a, you know, some covert government thing, they would do that. They wouldn't be actual registered, you know, license plates. So and I that would probably be a tip off if one of those cars get pulled over by a normal cop, you know, oh, this isn't even a registered car.
Yeah.
It's because I'm a Fed buddy. So, well, this is Dion's, you know, perspective on this. So this is when Guffey was starting to think something might actually be going on, not just a case of meth psychosis. But then we kind of segue into the crazier part of this, where Dion called Guffey and told him there is invisible ninja midgets harassing him.
Here we go.
So when Guffey asked how he knew they were midgets since they're invisible.
Great question.
Dion said not to worry about that. He just described people brushing up against him in his living room when no one was there, moving furniture around, and just being a general nuisance. There was an interesting part of it where he could catch them in his sight line a little bit. And this is why Guffey kind of went down the research of invisibility tech, is because he's like, this sounds like some kind of tech. Doesn't sound like just psychosis or hallucination, which you can, I think you can do when you're on meth, because they go so long without sleep that they end up hallucinating quite a bit.
And food. They don't eat a lot too, because you're not hungry, right? So you're running on nothing, running on empty for days at a time sometimes. And yes, hallucinations can occur. But again, if we're doing some sort of gang stalking program, you round all the recruits up and you go, guys, I've got a real world exercise here, and it's gold. Because we can run in these suits that the dude can't see. He's hallucinating anyway. We'll move shit around, make it pretend like it's, you know, poltergeist sort of activity. We'll really dick with this guy's mind and he's going to lose his shit. The hardest part is going to be finding people who won't giggle in the corner when this dude's losing his shit to kind of keep their low profile, you know, incognito, as it were.
Which is why it's a weird choice they would have chose midgets, because those are giggly little people, aren't they?
Are they? I don't know about their sense of humor and disposition. I don't know if that's...
I
honestly
know about
them is
from Oompa Loompas. They're jolly.
Those are jolly.
Giggly. Yeah.
You're right. But are we to assume that they're all that way? Maybe there's a selection process involved in this that does include sort of a curmudgeon-y disposition. If you think about it, not all the doors were pumped about life. And so maybe they just selected a couple of those other guys. And you know.
Well, I imagine working for the government, especially some black ops, they probably wouldn't be as giggly anymore. They're highly trained. They're serious. They're jarhead midgets. So
yeah, that's a good point. They've got the boot camp down. They've probably been mylabbed a bit, you know, Montauked out.
Jacked. Just
oh,
jacked.
God, jacked. You know it. Yeah.
So an interesting point that Guffey had documented was that Dion would open the medicine cabinet. So, you know, most medicine cabinets have a mirror. And as he's opening it, he would catch a glimpse of one of these midgets behind him in the reflection. And I guess the reason that's interesting is depending on the background and the type of technology or whatever that's being used, that might actually, excuse me, that might actually happen because of the, it's hard to describe this because it's kind of, it varies between theory and actual technology that has been studied since the 90s. So if you think of it like predator cloaking, though, from the movie, where it's based on, it's chameleonic. That's why it's called this. So it's chameleonic. It's supposed to blend in with the background. So I guess if you're looking at it through a mirror and you open the door and the angle changes a bit, this is Guffy's idea, but it, you know, you open the door and it changes the angle just enough where you can catch an outline of the predator or the midget. So that was interesting, and it was actually plausible.
How did he know that they had ninja skills? Did he just assume it? And ninja midgets is just funner to say. More fun to say.
I think it's just because they're so elusive. I mean, they're in his apartment with him in there, but they'd brush up against him, but then he could never catch him or hit him. Because that would have been interesting. He got a punch in on one of these guys, and then it fails the cloaking, and then there you go.
And, you know, this is a great point, and perhaps the PSA can be offered now, that perhaps this is now protocol. You know, maybe when's the last time, you know, we add this to our maintenance or home maintenance policy here, to where your wife and you just go flailing about in all directions and see if you can tag one of these things crouching in the corner or something. Because it makes me think of in movies whenever the dude who played Smeagol or whatever, he had to wear a green suit, right? And so he's invisible to everything else. Or like when you go see a play and those people have the black suits on and they're animating something that the actors are using, but they're supposed to blend into the background. It's sort of this kitschy technology, but also if you think about it, it's an inverse vampire. The technology works to where it's only visible in a mirror, and unlike vampires who allegedly are not visible in mirrors. And that depends on if you go with the folklore of it or real world vampires, because there's a huge TikTok apparently where vampires are a real thing and they're running around and it's not what we thought. But either way, it is sort of this predatory thing that you can glimpse in a reflection rather than the predatory thing's reflection being non-existent. Again, the reality is fairly inverted in many ways, but it would make sense if the tech did work on some sort of refraction technology that, yes, at the right angle, the right light, you would be able to compromise the integrity of its, you know, ability to perform.
Right. And especially if this is in a testing phase, which it seems like it would be if they're, you know, testing it out on some random junkie. They're like, perfect subject. We can test out this technology in a real world environment without really any repercussions.
And you don't know what crack smoke and Pall Malls indoors do to a suit, you know, due to the electronics. You know, maybe they're fatiguing it a bit and eating away. And they're like, oh, shit, we got to get something stronger.
But yeah, so check your corners for invisible midgets, people, or just get a cat, because those little guys will know when there's an invisible ninja midget in your house. They will know. They'll sit there and stare at it. Trust me.
No cloaking technology is safe from cats. Get a cat, guys. They're great.
I mean, they see ghosts and stuff. So
probably portals to other dimensions. We'll talk about the Lyran connection and all that. The Egyptians' reverie for them. Cats are awesome.
Not everyone likes cats.
That's okay. You might be a ninja midget in disguise. Okay,
they're, just they're think heated about it. Blankets, evaluate your especially life. Now during the winter, they're little heated blankets. They come sit on my lap. I'm like, thanks, bro.
They're
nice and warm.
Yep.
So he thought he said it resembled auras, like how you could see it. I guess Dion suffered from migraines too, and he thought maybe that's what it was, where you can kind of see outlines of things when you have a really gnarly headache, but. He also didn't have a headache at the time, but that's what he kind of equated it to, is that type of feel when you have a migraine. But he noted when you feel the presence of someone watching him, like you mentioned, you can feel eyes on you in public and you look over and somebody's creepily staring at you.
Meth will also do this, though. A good healthy dose of radical paranoia will give you this effect as well.
Oh, yeah. So I'm going to go back to when Robert was looking into this adaptive camouflage thing, and he found out that since the 90s, at least as far as, you know, the Pentagon's research wing, DARPA, you might be familiar with it, they had been funding projects using metamaterials to bend electromagnetic waves around an object, making it effectively invisible to cameras and maybe even the human eye.
Shocker.
Now, obviously, with cameras, there's all kinds of tricks you can do, but doing it in a real-life, real-time scenario, especially being in somebody's apartment, That would be something you'd want to test out before you just send a soldier into battle with this technology. So,
and you got to think about the different optic systems available for anybody. So if you get a FLIR camera or something like that, I know Trey Hudson, he's got some dope ass FLIR cameras that he'll show you. And they pick up body heat, you know, do the suits nullify body heat and the ability for thermals to pick them up? Or is it simply an eye thing, right? A reflective thing. And they just assume this dude's not going to spring for the night vision goggles, which maybe he had in his possession. And maybe that's the key to all of this, is that they were running around going, dude, if you just get these goggles, you could see us and then we'll know you have the goggles. Maybe that was sort of the trick to lure them out.
I think they actually mentioned that. They toss a lot of theories around, especially when they talk to this scientist later. But there's all kinds of different ideas they were tossing around, like, oh, it was maybe the goggles would let you see these people. Maybe that's the real reason that all of this is happening. That did come up. But so he's looking at all these, you know, public academia papers, small scale prototypes were apparently a thing. But there's also rumors of classified spinoffs, field tests hidden behind innocuous names like Chameleo, chameleonic, invisibility tech. That's the only other way to put it. And it sounds sci-fi as shit, but a lot of these things, I mean, there's people that think that basically anything in sci-fi is something that either they're capable of doing or they're at least working on. So is it art imitates life or the other way around?
It's that idea of revelation of the method, right? Like that idea that the controllers, and again, I don't call them elites or anything. I'm holding up bear quotes for the audio only version, which we are
lizard
right now.
Lizard turds.
Lizard turds. That's what we affectionately refer to them as, because not all lizard people are turds. They're just those specific ones are most likely probably lizard turds, affectionately. Yeah. And it's just an interesting scenario that we look at here, because yes, if you're thinking of that, this project involves concealed technology from the visible eye, and then also that there's a goggle component to it, that you would think that it's hand in hand, that they go together, that the goggles are a part of the suit, and that maybe these things are wearing, you know, whoever's wearing the suit actually has these goggles on as well, and that's part of the thing, so they can see each other, right? And then also, you know, again, maybe it's just part of the accoutrement. It's just interesting that we're talking about things that he feels are running around his apartment. He's even caught a glimpse in physically due to the compromise of the integrity of the technology in the mirror. And then also he is allegedly in possession of some goggles that could probably nullify this whole thing. Again, I see them as being hand-in-hand technologies for sure.
Yeah, it makes sense. And they mention, Dion's going, it's night vision goggles. Who cares? You can buy these like on Amazon. He didn't say that because I think this is before Amazon sold stuff like that. But basically, you can get, as a normal citizen, you can get night vision goggles. So it makes me think that they weren't exact. Maybe night vision was part of it. But yeah, it makes me think it was more like Kirlian photography, where they could see more than just night vision.
Did you think about the Dysonian dye goggles and things like that, right? That allegedly Russia developed. I have a pair that this guy from Museum of Terra sent me, Brent. And
those are
outside.
Real?
I have a real pair. Yeah, that he simulated the solution and then makes these things. And so we've got it. It has a whole pamphlet and everything. Actually, Andre Mitty from Ascension of the Chessmen, shout out. He came out and tried them on. And we're walking around in the sun. And this is also when we filmed the eclipse. We filmed it through the goggles and saw a third layer, like actual rings. And then Tyler Hansen, the fittest flat earther, took that clip and then covered a video on it through the goggles. So it's like a purple film that you look through, and they work best in sunlight. So your eyes need to adjust and all that, sort of like wearing the toe shoes, you got to work up to it. But yeah, you wear those things and it is very different. So who knows if they weren't at least coated with those, or that it was a setting that you could flip between, right? You know, sort of like the Predator does, exactly what you said. Maybe they saw the movie Predator and then said, oh, we got to make a suit that does all that cool shit. Or like you said, maybe Predators really do exist and they're running around here. They got a hold of one. They were able to set up a set of mirrors and trap it or something. And then now they have access to the suit. And then, of course, they'll make one and stick ninja midgets in it.
Right. Is it art imitates life or the other way around? Are they reverse engineering some kind of tech, or did they create that tech and then Hollywood picks up on it? Because I don't know if you're aware of this, Brandon, but a lot of movies have CIA correspondence.
What?
I know. Crazy, right?
Well, and this is the thing. You see all kinds of folks in movies, and it's like, okay, well, are they actors on the TV whenever they're not in movies, or is the fact that they're actors in what we call real life evident in the fact that they're in movies, right? Like, they're obviously actors to some degree. Are they just playing in a movie for now? Or was Neil deGrasse Tyson an actor the whole time and they just happened to finally stick him in movies because he had good enough chops, you know, to finally be in a movie, Zoolander 2 or something?
Oh, Neil deGrasse Tyson, what a great actor that guy is.
He's a lot of fun. Yeah. Him and the bow tie guy. I like those guys.
So they did mention at one point, I remember in the book, they mentioned being $500,000 worth of night vision goggles. So this is also, you know, early 2000s.
Is this like the $10,000 toilet seat for NASA? You know what I mean? Were they just a normal pair that they just jacked the price up on because it said U.S. government on the side of it?
Yeah, it's like when you go to the hospital and they charge you $25 for a mucus retention device, which is right. A Kleenex.
Yeah. You're like, what's this? And they're like, $85,000. Oh, it's a Band-Aid. Oh, okay. Cool. Thanks.
So after all this, one day it just all stopped. Everything stopped. All the madness stopped. The car's following him. The jarheads watching him from outside his apartment. They just went away.
I feel like that would be just as jarring, wouldn't it? That, you know, you're suspicious of all this activity. It's happening. It's running around all the way. And then all of a sudden, just everybody's on vacation or they need to go gang stalk somebody else. And that crew needs your help to play shop owner number three.
Yeah. Too many people called in sick that day. But
right. It
is funny because everything stopped and kind of abruptly where Dion noticed it just stopped because he's so hyper aware of all these things going on that one day he's like, whoa, peace and quiet. This is weird. But not more than 20 minutes later, who shows up at his door? But Special Agent Lita Johnston from the NCIS comes back to his door with the two men in black dudes behind her again asking about the night vision goggles. He again insisted he didn't know, and she just said, oh, that's too bad, because if he did know, she could probably help him. And he just came straight out and said, why do you have people tailing me? Which she just said was ridiculous. Obviously, they're going to say that. Oh, that's ridiculous. Like, we'd spend resources to follow your junky ass. Okay. But she did give him her business card with a reminder to call if he remembered anything about the goggles. And it's still weird, though, that they're following Dion instead of Lee, who they also took into custody, which is the one that went AWOL and took him in the first place. But instead, they're badgering Dion about it.
Did Dion ever see any goggles?
I don't think so. I don't think you remember. He doesn't remember ever actually even seeing him.
Hmm. And this is what's interesting. If that lady was like, oh, it's too bad you don't have them. I can help you out. Put them on. And it's sort of like the check under your chair from Oprah, right? And he puts these things on and turns. She's like, now turn around. And there's the ninja midget spelling out the YMCA in his living room.
What kind of mob tactic is that, though? Oh, you don't know? Be sure be better if you did.
Maybe up yet if you can find them goggles.
You don't want your pizzeria to burn down, do you?
Yeah, it'd be a shame.
Yeah, wouldn't that be a shame?
And then the real question is, why midgets? Was it an allocation of resources? Was it that they could only make, you know, for the price that they could make six suits for that size, they could make three for other guys, and so they went with the numbers game over...
Yeah, I think so, because you got to imagine metamaterials fabrics have to be expensive.
I think so.
Less fabric for a smaller, you know, frame, maybe.
Children's clothing is cheaper, allegedly, you know, because it should take less material to cover that.
I don't know. When my kid was a baby, little Vans, like Vans, kid-sized Vans, they were not cheap.
Well, the whole thing's a racket, but it should be cheaper, right?
In theory, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, but right after she left, the madness stops. She shows up again, badgering him about the goggles. He tells her to screw off. Basically, she leaves. The madness resumed again, and this time even more bizarre than it has been. He started getting the sense of this pocket dimension idea, you know, where something looks bigger on the inside than it does from the outside. We hear this a lot in UFO stories.
We're going to spend so much time on this, dude. I love this so much because this idea is so, pun intended, scalable. Like, yeah. It's insane.
So, you know, people that listen to MU will be familiar with these stories where you have a craft or, you know, something, and when you go in it looks like a whole warehouse, but on the outside, it's a 20-foot-long craft. So he started getting that feeling, and he actually, some of his friends would come over and say, wow, did it get bigger in here? So he had third-party people actually noticing it too. I don't think Guffey actually went over to his apartment and witnessed this himself, and it wasn't all the time. That's the other weird thing. It would be just randomly he'd come home one day and his apartment looked huge on the inside.
It would selectively Alice in Wonderland itself?
Yeah, pretty much. And it's like, well, was this guy eating the right kind of mushroom? Is that what happened? Because yeah. That does happen on mushrooms too.
What if it was verified as well by other crackheads? I mean, you can have shared psychedelic experiences, just like shared near death or anything else.
There's people that have tripped on acid together and seen the exact same apparent hallucination. So who knows?
It'll happen.
But one of the weirdest ones, this one is fascinating to me. So his living room window started looking like the background of a cheesy painting. And he likens it to a Boris Vallejo painting. And I think I looked it up before, but just kind of a... You know, swirling green mist, alien vegetation, three suns in the sky, that type of idea, just kind of surrealist. And he'd go outside and it would look normal, but then he'd come back inside and it would look like this crazy painting from his window. And it was only out that window. He'd look through his bedroom window, look normal. So he just had this weird holographic projection type of thing going on. But if it was a hallucination, you'd think when he went outside, he would also be hallucinating there, but no, he'd go in and out of his door and just see this crazy landscape. But it was like it was superimposed because there's still people out there walking around and whatnot. It's just the three suns in the sky, weird vegetation. Just it reminded me of AR technology, augmented reality.
Yes, because you could ideally selectively just on that one face, or at least project that one face reveals an image different. And especially if it's glass, right? You've seen the movies where they have holographic technology on just a screen, a pane of glass, not a whole monitor screen like what we have with the black back and all the components concealed. And allegedly, you can just project onto glass itself. So yes, this wouldn't be another trippy ass way to do it. But also, there are cases of these glitches in the Matrix. Have you ever seen these where a guy
I
love them. Guy will be sitting in his car and looking at the guy who is in his car next to him in his rearview mirror. And then the face will move in the mirror, but not the guy sitting next to him. That's weird as shit. Or you will hear these stories of somebody like what you're talking about here. Look out their window and it's sunny and they go outside and it's raining. It's weird shit like this. So what is happening? Is reality really weird around them? Are they in some weird time slip? Or, like you said, is it some sort of technology that could maybe that's maybe inspired by actual glitches in the Matrix that can then just alter your perception enough to continue this gaslighting technique and make you feel like you're going nuts?
Right. And that's the question it always is with all of these weird examples is why? What is the actual point of this? The other thing about it being possible, like AR technology, is this is again in 2003. This is before any of that kind of tech was widely available or even really being developed, as far as we know, of course. But the military is probably at least 20 years ahead of the mainstream, you know, plebs of society. So,
at least
who knows? It's my opinion that by the time things like virtual reality or any of these technologies are rolled out and you can buy it on Amazon, it's been around for a while and they've perfected it and now they're letting us play with it. Same with AI generators, Suno, the music generator. That's probably been around a lot longer than we think. It's just now being rolled out so we can play with it because it's a toy to us now. That's my opinion.
Yep. And remember, if it's free, you're the product.
Data collection. Hello, Facebook. Hello, Instagram.
What?
Yeah, you are the product.
Yeah, but we don't do that here. We just love you for who you are.
Yeah, he starts getting a little more paranoid at this point because he's seeing all this crazy stuff. And he ends up making this giant sign that says, please don't shoot me. I don't know why he was really in fear of being shot besides that you have these jarheads following you. I don't remember or I don't recall if he actually saw them with guns or not, but they looked military enough that he assumed they're packing some kind of heat, which I imagine they were if they're on a stalking case like this. So that same night, after he made this big sign that said, please don't shoot me, he sees this shadow projection on his wall. Like, what do they call that when you make like a dog out of, you know, shadow?
Oh, shadow puppet.
Yeah.
That's fun.
So he sees that, but it's a giant hand gripping a gun, pointing at a silhouette of his head and just firing over and over again. It's just a shadow projection. And he's like, what the hell, bro?
So is this augmented reality again, you know, the use of this AR tech, or is it one of these dudes in suits that pulled his glove off and he's got a gun and he's sitting there so that he can be seen in light, you know, and flailing it around a little bit? Did he whip his head around again? Did he go scissor kicking around the room checking for these things?
He should have. And I think he did. I mean, being being a, you know, your average crackhead, I'm sure he did plenty of that just, you know, as part of his daily routine.
Imagine though the Tai Chi techniques of these dudes running around the apartment, that they've got to work around this skittery bug that's just jarting everywhere from side to side constantly, yeah. Right? And just getting up and sprinting across the room for no reason. They've got to be on constant alert. So this
is why they're ninja midgets.
They are ninjas. They have the skills.
They are agile. So then comes one day he just had enough of it, and he sees these two of these jarheads. They're watching him from the fence, from behind the fence outside. And this is classic crackhead stuff. They're peeking at him through the, you know, the slats.
The slats. The fence.
But you can see him out there, and he's like, you know what? He started making dinner. He's whipping up some spaghetti. But as he's doing it, he's like, you know what? Screw these guys. He starts adding all kinds of weird stuff into the spaghetti. Gelatin, baking soda, peanut butter, cayenne pepper. He just starts putting all this weird stuff in there and makes this gross paste, this goop.
While singing a theme song of Hocus Pocus.
Yeah. He runs outside and just dumps it over the fence onto their heads. And they scream and run off. I imagine it was hot. I don't know if it was like piping hot, but he just hit him with a dose of nasty, especially if there's cayenne pepper in there. It probably was like, you know, pepper spray to the eyes.
Damn.
So they scream and run off. So he calls Lita and he's like, you know what? I've had enough. I'll play ball. He's like, I'll make something up. Yeah, sure. I saw the goggles, but they got destroyed in an unfortunate boating accident. Like, he's just going to make something up because he's had enough. And, he said he was tired of being followed and harassed, which he again denied. So he hangs up in frustration. She shows up at his door a few days later again and asked if he was still willing to cooperate, which at this point he was not, because he's like, you know what? You're not even like copping to the fact that you have people following me, and I know you do. I just dump shit on their head. Like, there's definitely something going on. And so he's just kind of pissed at her. And I mean, having your own personal NCIS agent that you can call is, that's enough for any normal person to go crazy from. So he was not willing to cooperate, but she called him again a few days later and asked to meet him for lunch. Like, hey, peace offering, come out to lunch with me and we'll talk about this. So Dion calls Guffy to update him on all of this crazy stuff that's been happening and that he was going to make a deal with Lita. So when they go out to lunch, this is the one time Lita slipped a little bit. He, in the middle of their talking, Dion's still talking about, why do you have people following me? And I'm tired of like having food fights with the feds. I don't want to have to like waste my spaghetti for your stupid jarheads out there. And when he mentioned that, Lita laughed and she just chuckled and said, oh yeah, that made us laugh. And he's kind of like, what? That's an admission. Like, you do have people following me. What are you? This is like the only time that I remember in the story that they actually kind of like admitted that's what was happening, but not really. Cause, oh yeah, ha ha ha, made us laugh. So you obviously saw it. At the very least, you saw that happen. So.
And it's even more interesting to think that the NCIS is really just paying people to sort of follow him around. Like, they employed 40 private detectives, right? And that's all they did. They just said, dude, just walk around and follow this guy. And then these dudes are just standing there. Maybe they all met up on the other side of the fence or something like that per, order. Maybe she's running this whole thing, pulling from the strings from the back, because then it's not connected directly, right? It's just, oh, we hired them as a contractor. They're a 1099 employee just coming out, just watching this dude. That's all they were told to do. And that's enough to get him riled up, to make him crack. You know what I mean? And then it's interesting to think that they're reporting back going, man, you can take this job and shove it. There's not enough money because they got all this shit dumped on them. Like, they weren't prepared or trained for this at all. And that they're having just as tough of a time with this as the dude is, you know what I mean? They're back there going, dude, I'm having a tough time keeping my shit together. She's like, dude, I'll triple your cost, whatever. Just hang in there.
Well, they're probably just rookies or privates. You know, they're just low man on the totem pole type people. And they're like, guess what your job is? You get to follow this crackhead around and fuck with him a little bit.
If not just community theater actors, again, that they just kind of hire and they say, all right, you know, here you go. Here's your greatest role ever, Thespian. Get out there and make it look good.
So after all this, Dion was like, you know what? I'm getting the hell out of here. I'm leaving Pacific Beach. During this, right before he moved, actually, he needed a vehicle. And so Robert had been wiring him money, and Dion's dad was paying him back. It was a weird situation. I don't know why Dion's dad didn't just send him money, but he'd have Robert wire him money through Western Union, and then he'd send him a check, because, again, early 2000s, people still used fucking checks. So he'd send him a check, he'd reimburse him. Robert doesn't have a whole lot of money even, you know, as a college professor where he didn't have like a whole lot of money. So he's just like, well, every time I send him money though, his dad reimburses me. So it's really no skin off my sack, you know, so I'll keep doing this. But Dion needed a vehicle. And so he ended up sending him enough money to buy this dumpy van, which he ends up calling the death van, because it's just, it's exactly what you imagine from a junkie van. It's just, he lived in it, probably pooped in it. There's drugs in it. It's just nasty. But Robert's just like, you need to leave, man. Leave this, leave the drugs, leave everything, just go. And so their relationship was kind of on and off for the next several years, but they kept in touch. And like I said, there's whole chapters of this book where it's just him having phone calls with Dion and kind of catching up with him. And a lot of it's just, if you've ever been around people on cocaine, that's what these conversations sounded like. It's just a lot of Dion just mouth vomiting about stupid stuff, and a very little of it has to do with the broader scope of the story. So I didn't really go into that as far as my notes, but in the same time, Robert's going through his own personal stuff, crazy girlfriends. He has this, this girl, I can't remember her name. I didn't put it in my notes, but he had this crazy girlfriend that had a genuine mental illness. She was like schizophrenic or something. And so he's dealing with that. He's trying to distance himself from Dion because that's just a level of crazy he doesn't want in his life anymore. Meanwhile, he's still keeping all these notes on what's happening. But there's a couple chapters where it just has to do with Guffey's, you know, personal stuff. But there is one story that I wanted to add in from Guffey's own life, because it seemed like he was kind of getting tailed too. Probably because of his close association with Dion.
Yeah, like he passed the goggles to him or something. You got to keep tabs on everybody this dude's had contact with if this is what's going on, right?
Right, and weirdly, this is several years later. I mean, this isn't even that same summer. I mean, all this madness with the food fights and all that stuff kind of happened within, I want to say, like 6 or 8 months in 2003 to 2004. So this is well after that. But Guffey gets a call from one of his students at one of the first classes he taught back in 2002, this chick named Ziva, and they'd kept in contact, and she wanted to meet up with him, kind of catch up, you know, see how he's doing. And they agreed to meet together for lunch, and she's on the phone with him. She's like, oh, I'm at this bus stop on, you know, this street. We're going to go to this restaurant called 555, kind of this hoity-toity. And Guffey's like, okay, I'll pay for lunch, no problem. I'll come pick you up. And she's like, okay. So I met this guy on the bus named Pete, and he wanted to join us for lunch, and he offered to pay. And Guffey was pissed at first, because he's like, why would you put me in this weird, awkward social interaction of some dude you met on the bus that I've never met, you've never met, now he's coming to lunch with us? What are you talking about?
It's so weird.
But he didn't want to stand her up, and he kind of saw Ziva as a reprieve from his crazy life. He's like, I just want to meet up for lunch with a relatively stable chick that just, we can just talk about other things, you know, kind of have a turn my brain off from all this stuff. So he thought it was weird because Pete tells him that he's a longshoreman and that he rode that same bus every day, the one that Ziva met him on. And it was weird, though, because Guffey and Ziva both rode that bus a lot, and they'd never seen him before. And he said he lived around the corner. They'd never seen this guy before, which in a big city, okay, not that unlikely. But that exact bus, he said he rode every day for his longshoreman job. Weird part is, Guffey goes to shake his hand, and he notices that his fingernails looked manicured, like uber clean, you know, real manicured. And he's
like white collar, not blue collar work,
right? No calluses, yeah. Soft white collar hands. And he's like, so immediately red flags go up, especially when you're in Guffey's position and you're dealing with all this madness from your friend, your good old buddy Dion getting followed by NCIS. So he's like, okay, this is weird. So he decides to play it cool, even though he's still kind of pissed at Ziva for saying this guy can come with them for whatever reason.
Well, do you think she was part of it the whole time? Like sort of maybe that she'd been in a plant and then that was just the way in for this guy because they knew he would trust her enough to go to lunch, and then now this guy could just, I'm on the bus.
I guess it's possible, but it doesn't come across like that in the book. The way that Guffey portrays Ziva, she's just kind of a naive, kind of idealistic, you know, younger chick that's just kind of like, overly social, which is somebody who would be like, oh, sure, come to lunch with us, random bus guy, you know?
Gotcha.
So Guffey was just thinking that this dude was, you know, trying to get a piece of ass. And he's like, oh, I've seen this chick around. And but the more that they talked during lunch, the more he realized that he had no interest in Ziva. This Pete guy had no interest in Ziva. He was focused on Guffy, talking to him in about seemingly random and bizarre questions. He'd asked Guffy if he'd ever read the book Behold a Pale Horse, or if he was interested in conspiracies and the Illuminati and all this stuff. And Guffy's just like, nope, never heard of it. Even though he has a whole library at home dedicated to nothing. I mean, he's a Mason too, right? So he's got all kinds of weird esoteric books, all this, you know, Bill Cooper-esque type stuff.
Yeah, which if Bill Cooper had taken Dion's, you know, a page out of Dion's book there and said, I'll just put a sign up in my window that says, don't shoot me. Maybe things would have turned out differently for him too.
I think they might have mentioned that.
Because Dion didn't get shot, did he?
No.
See?
So it's funny though, because he's asking Guffy all this stuff and Robert's just like, I'm playing this off because I don't trust this guy more than I can throw him. Like, what is this? And Pete keeps asking, oh, have you ever heard of the Freemasons and how they control the world and all this? And nope. Even at the time, Guffy's a 32 degree Scottish Rite Mason. So he knows all about this stuff, obviously, but he's just playing it off. And the more he played it off, the more Pete kind of seemed to like short out because it wasn't part of the script. Like the script didn't allow for this response.
Yeah.
He was taken off guard. And so they just kept making it weird. And Ziva had to get up to take a phone call. And that's when he gets real. The other thing that stood out is, I guess, a lot of his answers, because Guffy's asking him, oh, what's Behold a Pale Horse about? And they were real kind of stock standard answers. He got the idea that if somebody had actually read that book, he'd have more unique insights on this book rather than these stock answers. So yeah, it just seemed to make Pete real uncomfortable when he, came back with these answers, and Guffy didn't believe him for a second. The lunch ends up ending very abruptly and weirdly, where Ziva just goes, you know what? Me and Robert have stuff to do. We need to leave. And that was the end of that. He does note that he never once again saw this Pete guy on the bus or anywhere around town or anything. So just popped in one day to ask a bunch of weird ass questions and then disappeared. So I just thought that was a weird part of Robert's side of, you know, the story. But
what's it's odd too, because if this is like, let's say it is a phenomena, not a MyLab thing, right? Or that it's in cahoots, or that the phenomena is posing as, like you said, they're a Men in Black type, you know? I mean, maybe it's not necessarily a governmental agency representative that just simply poses that in this sort of human suit, or even a screen memory of that there's a human standing there, and dude may have been talking to an alien or something, you know? And then it's just interesting to where, if you think that maybe the goggles themselves possessed the power of the invisibility and all of that, whenever he was able to catch a reflection of the ninja midget in the tub from his mirror, did he say that, was he able to describe what part of him he saw? Because every now and then he would see an arm or something like that, right? But they weren't, were they covered in clothing, or was it like a bare arm?
They don't really detail that. He just says he caught a glimpse or like an aura. I think that's how he knew that they were midgets, is because he could catch enough of an outline or kind of a movement of some sort that gave him the idea that they were very small.
Was he sure that they were human? Like, were they just sort of some gray that had sort of some cloaking invisibility technology or something where they could screen memory the dude the whole time and just push his furniture around and maybe phase in and out of reality kind of a thing?
Yeah, I don't know. I guess he doesn't really go into that. He got the impression that they were very small and invisible. And this is such a small part of the story, but it's kind of a huge, the whole purpose of the book, the Camellio idea and this kind of technology that Guffy was looking into. So he starts looking into it more and going into kind of academia and patents. He's looking at different patents that have been registered, and he finds this dude named Richard Schoengert. And this is where him being a Mason comes back in. It's really strange. This dude ends up being a 33rd degree Mason in his own lodge. And this dude just so happens to be doing all these. He has contracts with Northrop Grumman. He's been studying chameleonic invisibility since 1987, electro-optical camo, they call it. And he just so happens to be another Freemason in his own lodge. And he's like, well, I must have met this guy before, right? And so he emails him. He's like, I would love to interview you about your research into this tech. And so they end up meeting. I guess they had a lodge meeting one day, and he ends up meeting the guy, and he's like, "Oh wow, I'm Robert Guffey. I'm the one who wants to interview you." And so they set up this interview, and the next, I don't know, chapter or two is just a transcript of the interview. And if you're into that kind of like dense academic type stuff, that's kind of what it is. But Dion's also there and telling Richard Schoenger his story too about these invisible people, and Richard kind of agrees with him. He's like, that does sound like this Camellio type tech that maybe they were testing out. And again, he's been studying this and developing prototypes since the 80s. So he's like, it makes sense that they would be in maybe a rollout testing phase. Again, this is in 2003. And Richard specifically says that he thinks that these patents and these devices or whatever they're using would be ready to roll out. Guess when? In 2025.
Oh.
So if you see any invisible midgets in your house, they've probably rolled it out by now.
You better hurry up. We're at the ass end of this thing. So yes, go flailing about. See if you make that one of your new home's new policies. Might be some, you know, good calisthenics for you. Get up and move a little bit and do it under the guise of that. Get up and, you know, emulate a crackhead every now and then. And just to kind of keep the ninja midgets in your home on their toes, pattern interrupt them as well. And fart as much as you possibly can, I would think.
Yes, that would piss them off. Because they were watching him like whack off and stuff too.
Well, I think so.
He caught glimpses of him while he's, you know, stroking the salami. And he's like, dude, can I just whack it in peace?
I would be yelling out loud, I'm into this, so that it would make it as awkward as possible for anybody crouching in the corner in a hidden suit.
Ninja midgets. Oh, yeah.
I love it.
So I am at the end of my notes, almost. I have a quick epilogue. So the funny part is, I didn't mention this at the beginning because you might not listen to it if I did, but Robert actually opens the book by saying, if you're the type of person who likes a nice story with a bow on top at the end, this is not for you, basically. This is open-ended. I don't have any more answers than I did when I wrote this thing. Like, I have no, like, addendum because, and again, this is published in 2015. And I know he's done some interviews since then, but I still don't think he's actually come up with any, you know, answers to any of this. But besides the Richard Schoenger stuff, who died in 2021, so we won't be getting him on as a guest, but he did quite a bit of research, and I think, you know, they go over the patents and how basically the army or the military can take over whatever patent they want and use it. And so who knows? I mean, they have all kinds of private sector tech that it might be patented, but the government has kind of eminent domain over patents, so they can do whatever they want. And they're gonna anyway. They'll just pay you off. They're like, oh, we want this. Here's $1 million. Shut up. Go away. So the only epilogue is about 2 years after Guffey was pretty much done writing the Camellio book, he heard from Dion, who said the harassment had mostly stopped since he moved down to San Francisco. But then in 2011, he moved up to his mother's place in the Redwoods, up in my neck of the woods, near the Lost Coast. Shout out Humboldt. And within weeks of moving there, the high strangeness just ramped up again, but like with a renewed intensity. Again, people being in his house, people being outside his house, watching the same type of stuff. But he was also started seeing like classic 1950s style UFOs and weird lights that would move around in, you know, breaking all laws of physics. We know these stories, but he was seeing that. And he was actually trying to get pictures of them with his camera and doing all this stuff. After several weeks of documenting these, then he sees this military style drone flying well below the cloud cover and releasing a bunch of these same lights he'd been watching for weeks.
Damn.
And so in his mind, this is all military stuff, but if you didn't go through all this stuff, you'd think maybe aliens, who knows? But this is also Humboldt, tons of pot farms, paranoid people because of feds, and it could be some kind of surveillance like that. Who knows?
When heavy drug use, like, you know, the stuff you described Dion being on, will absolutely open you up to all sorts of interactions, not just in the physical, but they'll manifest in physical ways, poltergeist activity, spirit possession, things like this. And so if you're down that path, I mean, it'd be easy for the phenomena itself to mimic itself as a governmental agency, right? As something official. And we see this in the case of UFOs that would change shape. You know, they've morphed over time anyway, that these craft, and we could say that just like our cars, they go through technological advancements and then offer some new model. But if we're looking at it, some of them can change shape physically right in front of you, almost like the shape-shifting entities that they talk about cryptozoologically, that they will also be a mechanical component to this as well, which then calls into question, are UFOs alive? And we can definitely talk about that. But there are all sorts of different ways of perceiving this place. So again, if it wanted to be couched as a MyLab sort of military experiment, then aliens just simply manifest to the guy every now and then. You hand that out. And then also then all you need to do is plant people in his reality, right? Again, it could be just something as simple as they're dicking with his mind so much that entities appear. And then also, if you're sitting here thinking and contemplating alternate versions of reality, right? Like, what is your presupposition for how this bitch operates at all? Are you a brain in a vat? You know, is this a simulation? Those kind of things. Then that could sort of explain some of the anomalous behavior as well. So there are just so many different factors to consider here, even though it's couched under the MyLab sort of military involvement. I mean, who knows? You know, again, they would be happy to take credit for some crazy cool shit, right? Especially if they're not responsible for it and let you think that it's them controlling it. They'd be happy to do that.
That's why I love it. There's so many different kind of perspectives in this book because, again, I left a lot of this story out. There's even weirder stuff. But you'll have to get the book for yourself because it is worth a read. And I actually had the audio version and it's like 8.5 hours. So it's a hell of a story, but it's definitely worth a look over if you're interested in this stuff. I did want to leave you with one quote that Robert adds in at the end of the book. He says, if everyone were to band together and recognize the simple fact that there are groups of people in this country and perhaps all over the world with far too much money on their hands and the perverse need to stalk and torture anyone who violates their myopic view of how human beings should think and behave, perhaps we could all do something to stop this dystopia from ruining our own lives and the lives of people we know, other people's lives, because the lives of others will soon become our own lives if we don't stop the nightmare before it grows out of anyone's control. And soon we'll be living in Surveillance City, and no one will walk the streets unwatched, and no one will care anyway, because we will have all lost the ability to care about anything except working for the benefits of the machine.
Oof.
And this was written 15 years ago. And it looks like we're kind of getting to that point. So he might have been onto something there.
Foreshadowing.
But that is Chameleo by Robert Guffey. You can get it on Amazon, probably Kindle, probably at Barnes & Noble. I didn't check that one, but
yeah. I'm sure we'll link it down below.
What have you got coming up on Plus?
Yes, coming up on Plus, we have Synchronicities by Allison Gray. The signs all point to you. And let's just get a little clip from Allison going here that we will debut of her talking about her work.
Years of trial and error have led me to understand that no, you're not supposed to follow the signs, nor are you supposed to ask God for a sign for anything. Popular opinion would have you believe that if you see 1111 on the microwave, it means you're supposed to text your ex or something. But the truth about synchronicity is far deeper than that. So what are you supposed to do with synchronicities? In this book, I will share my hard-earned, no-nonsense, clear-headed understanding of the function of synchronicity as it pertains to the spiritual path. May these words light your path, that you may be spared from stumbling around in the dark like I did for far too long.
And this is one of the big questions is, what is ruling, the inner world or outer world? And she has a fascinating perception on synchronicities, and she's just a delightful writer, honestly. I reached out to her to see if we could and connected with her because she sent me the book after you connected me with her. So this is all because of you, Joe. So thank you.
Synchronicity. Look at that.
Exactly. It's a beautiful synchronicity, and we're going to talk about that. You know, and opening up with the difference between coincidence and synchronicity, because there feels to be a big coincidence in that Chameleo story that the guy just happened to be a 33rd degree Mason that happened to know also about the tech being rolled out in the area. Some would call that a coincidence. Some would call that a synchronicity.
Little coinkydinks here and there.
And then the question is, you know, it calls in again this sort of perception of reality. Like, what? How do you choose to view the world? Can dictate how you interact with it. And if this is the case, then synchronicities in that way would be that it all points to you, which is Allison's subtitle for her book here. It means that all of this was generated from Dion at a level. So Lee perhaps was the catalyst that installed the program that ran Dion's infatuation for a time. Maybe he needed something to do. And, you know, you think about this sort of as a subconscious scavenger hunt for yourself. You know, you get bored around the realm. You've got things that you could be working on about yourself. You could be on being a good member of society. Instead, you choose to do other things. And so there's an experience to be had in that experience. And then maybe if this is some sort of simulation, everything just pops up around you to fulfill that expectation of what it should be. You ask yourself, you know, when you plant squash and squash bugs come up, where are all the squash bugs when you're not planting squash, when there's no squash around? It seems that they just come around the second that you plant squash. And it's fascinating to think that they're sort of conjoined species or interactive forces or, let's say, complementary elements here that one plays off the other. You know, if you give a mouse a cookie, he's going to need a glass of milk. If you're a crackhead, you're probably going to invite a guy over that stole a bunch of shit from a military base and then get your door knocked on. And then also you're going to get ninja midgets running around your house. It's this slippery slope with all of these things. And it all has to do with synchronicities, honestly. And again, like what we talked about in the last Plus episode, your RAS, reticular activating system, being such an important filter for you to assign what you want it to dictate in your reality. And synchronicities have a lot to do with you being able to trust your ability to recognize such things. I'll just read you something here before we close out. So before she gets into her analysis, this is what she's encouraging. If you recognize that there is no such thing as meaningless coincidence, you are already leagues ahead of most people. And more importantly, leagues ahead of your past self on your journey of awakening. And we're going to get deeper into that because, again, she has fascinating perspectives and is an excellent writer. So thank you again, Allison, for the clips access to that, and then also for sending me the book, because she did. And it's wonderful, honestly. I highly recommend it. And it will be linked down below in the Plus extension coming up. So you guys stick around and sign up for your favorite show. You can hit the $9 tier before February, and then that will give you access to the new show that the boys have coming up, Inescapable. Are they going to do some cool, like, Sunday, inescapable kind of voice for it?
I can't wait. I told Ben yesterday that he better not charge me to listen to his new show.
Yes.
I'm not going to pay you so that you can pay me, Ben. So give me access to the show.
It's asinine.
I can't wait, though. Yeah, if you guys are fans of Ben and Aaron and not just, you know, the crazy stuff that we talk about here, but definitely sign up for Plus before the end of the year and get access to that second show, because the boys are still here. I mean, we're here now in these seats, but the boys are still going to be doing their thing, and I can't wait to see what they've got coming up in 2026. It's going to be a fun time, but good stuff. Thanks, Brandon, for listening to my babbling for an hour and a half almost.
Man, you crushed it.
Stick around for Plus if you're on Plus. If not, we will catch you guys next week. Have a good one.
Welcome to your Plus extension. We are grateful that you are here, and thank you so much for signing up and supporting your